Welcome to Frame of Reference, informed, intelligent conversations about the issues and challenges facing everyone in today's world. In-depth interviews with Sauk County's leaders and professionals to help you expand and inform your frame of reference. Brought to you by the Max FM Digital Network. Now here's your host, Raoul Labrèche.
Well, welcome to another edition of Frame of Reference. Today is marks a first for me, at least on this podcast, because I have more than one or two guests. I have four guests today, which means today's episodes and tomorrow and next episode, because this is going to be a multi-episode thing, I can tell already. But it'll be much more interesting than usual because I won't be talking as much. So, and I'm really excited because this is a group of people that are all part of a really interesting and a unique event that happens in Sauk County. You may have read of it in different parts of the country because it's got some national recognition as well. It's one of those things where you may read it like I did. I'll full disclosure, when the first time I read about this, I thought, what is that about? And then as I got to know more and more about not only the founders, but the event itself, I thought, this is really cool. Somebody should have thought of this a long time ago, because the comparisons, the event is called the Farm Art Detour, which we'll talk more about what that all is, but it started by an organization called the Worm Farm Institute. And the Worm Farm Institute alone, you think, a worm farm, that's an interesting idea. Anyways, you'll find out more about that too, but you're going to want to listen in, and not only listen to this episode, but listen to the next couple, because I think we're going to carry on a conversation here that'll go for some time. But I'm going to go right across from my right to my left, which you guys listening right now have no idea what that is. You're just going to have to trust me on this. But on my far right is Julie Eng, who is, along with her husband, who's sitting right next to her. They are the co-founders, if I remember right, and the owners of a wonderful organization here in the area called the Veggie Emporium, based in Sauk County, Wisconsin. Jackie, thanks for joining me.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
The Veggie Emporium. That sounds like a very special kind of organization because it's not just a veggie market. It's a veggie emporium. So what makes Veggie Emporium stand out, you think?
Well, we have a ton of diverse veggies, and we also have fruit and nuts coming within the next few years. Ooh. And we're a regenerative micro farm.
Okay.
We started this this is our fourth season, and all we try to do is feed our local community with nutrient-rich food.
Okay.
So
excellent. Yeah. Nutrient-rich food. That sounds like that's probably better than the Captain Crunch that I eat on a fairly regular basis.
Yes, right? It is. Yeah.
Although the side panel says it has lots of vitamins and great things, but the sugar content alone is probably not so good. So, well, I'm sitting right to your right is your husband, Dan Eng, right? So, Dan, welcome to the show. Thanks for being a part of this.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Dan, tell me a little bit about yourself. Now, you and your wife decided to form this business together, right? This was a group effort. You didn't just wake up one day and said, I'm doing this. You're doing it with me, right? Or was it? I don't know.
No, that's correct. Like, I have been working on growing just a large variety of perennial food producing species, trees, shrubs, so like nut and fruit trees. And I've always, you know, ever since I was a kid, like, you know, kind of grew veggies. And Jackie, I think more than me, would grow veggies for herself. And we wanted to grow more of our own food. And when you start making a serious effort to grow your own food, you end up with a surplus.
Sure.
And so that's when we thought, well, we have surplus, so let's try a roadside stand with what we can't eat.
Sure.
And that's how it started.
So, and you've had that now for a while here in Baraboo, right? There'd been a sort of participated with the market there. And now you've gone beyond that, or do you have your own like full time all through the summer stand that's going as well?
Yeah. Around, when we first get our first crop, so May, June-ish, we put out our roadside stand. It's on County Road C in North Freedom, Wisconsin, but it's actually right next to the town of Denzer, one mile west of Denzer. And we just start stocking up whatever we have. And then that goes until pretty much the frost.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And then we bring our extras to the Baraboo Farmers Market to okay. try to extend that to the
Well, I would think there could be canning season too, right? Right after that. So
canning not? Season throughout. It's okay. it's a wild time of year right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, hey, well, we'll talk about some of that craziness too, hopefully, okay? Well, then directly to Dan's right is Brenda Baker. And Brenda is the over at Madison Arts Children Museum, right? Madison Children, she's an artist, a writer, a museum curator, and her work intersects with the fields of ecological restoration, sustainable design, cultural geography, and site-specific sculpture. Geez, Brenda, I wish you would have found something to do with your life. I mean, that sounds like you just really struggled. So, thanks for being on the show, Brenda. That's
thanks
wonderful.
So much for having me.
So, and now, are you an artist this year? Is some of your artwork being included on the Farm Art Detour?
Yes, I'm doing a collaboration with an artist from North Freedom, Beth Pershey,
okay.
and also with the Worm Farm Institute. So it's a collaboration with all three partners.
Okay. How does Madison Children's Museum fit into that? I remember going to that number of times with my daughter. But
That is my job during
okay.
the day.
Okay.
I'm also an artist on the side, but my artwork, of course, informs my work at the Children's Museum.
Sure. Sure. That process will be interesting to talk about, too, of how your artistic sensibility has brought you to places with the Farm Art Detour
right.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have lots to say about that, right?
Sure,
so,
yes.
And then to her right is the one, the only, Jay Salinas, who Jay and I met several years ago. I'm not sure still if he really, if Jay remembers that moment, but I remember thinking, boy, this guy looks like he could beat me up, so I should probably be nice to him. And then I found out he was a welder, and I thought, boy, he'd probably weld me to a chair if I'm really get out of line. But Jay, thanks for joining me again this
thanks.
Season.
Wow. So. Okay. Yeah. Well, crunchy and rough on the outside, but really soft and chewy on the inside.
That
so
makes sense.
I try to temper that rough exterior with some, hopefully, some little more sensitivity in between. I haven't thrown a blow in anger in about 45 years now.
That's a good thing. We don't want to see that.
For,
side.
Yeah.
Well, you do come from a mechanical background in addition to your artistic background, right? I mean, that is that part of the whole equation? Because you became a welder as part of what you wanted
well,
to do?
Well, I'm trained as a sculptor trained in the foundry, so cast bronze, aluminum, and even some iron.
Okay.
And if you're playing with metal, then you have to learn how to cut it and join it. And so I've never really considered myself a welder. I can make two pieces stick together, but your life should never depend on any weld that I make. But I have learned to do a variety of things over the years, most of them half-assed, but a few of them, fortunately, that's good enough.
So if the Highway 12 people have to rebuild the bridge here, we probably don't want to ask you.
Probably, I have several people I could recommend.
Okay, but you could maybe do some things that would hang off this cantilever off the ends of it or something. That just some works to say. Here are notable figures of Sauk County. That I don't know. Just
we could work on a proposal for something like that. Yeah.
So we could sculpt something. Just
there
do it as a makeup and see where things go. Right. So why not? Well, thanks all of you. So let's get to it with a little bit of an icebreaker. Okay. So I'll take kind of random here. Don't think you're going to be out of this for very long. But Brenda, I'm going to start with you. What's your favorite comfort food?
Raisin rice pudding.
Raisin rice pudding.
Yeah, it was a dish that my grandmother made all the time as a dessert.
Okay.
It's been passed along, a recipe passed along in my family. And yeah, it's something that I love to eat and love to make.
So this isn't like a Jell-O product. You
no.
can't get this at Piggly
no.
Wiggly.
This is something you have to make.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So one, I would think having good memories of your grandma and doing the family.
It's a family recipe. That makes
a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dan, what's your favorite comfort food?
Favorite comfort food? The first thing that comes to mind is definitely tacos.
The go-to food.
Yep.
Yeah, tacos and pizza, right?
Yep.
So what about tacos? Is it just no matter what you're feeling, it picks you right up? Or
yeah, it's always good. I like spicy and you can say tacos, but that might be a taco salad. That might be hard shell, soft shell, could be fajitas. Like, I call it all tacos.
Okay. So you're not really a taco connoisseur. It's more like if it's hot and it's got all the right ingredients, I'm good?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. So we could actually make a lot of things into tacos with that definition, couldn't we?
Yeah.
So taco cake, taco bratwurst. So why not? I mean, there could be an avenue here. Taco veggie bratwurst, I don't know, maybe.
The possibilities are endless.
It's true. Jay, favorite comfort food?
Let's see. There's a dish that I like a lot we call black-eyed pea stew.
Black-eyed pea stew.
It's an Indian drive dish. It has, you know, cumin and ginger and tomatoes and hot peppers, and it warms you literally and figuratively, and it's really hearty and healthy. And whenever I eat it, I feel every forkful, I feel healthier and happier every time I eat it.
So you just feel it's like Popeye spinach.
Exactly,
you just sort of feel yourself.
I can feel it, moving through my limbs.
Bluto, bring it, right?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Jackie, you thought you might get out of this one, but you're not. What's your favorite comfort food?
Roast. Adirondack blue mashed potatoes and a green bean casserole.
That is by far the most complicated answer to this question I've ever had. Say that again, because I lost you after roast.
Yeah. And I forgot the most important part. So roast, Adirondack blue mashed potatoes, they turn into a beautiful purple fairy-like mashed potato, put some basil and rosemary in it. Oh my gosh. And then a green bean casserole topped off with gravy. Thick gravy. I love food. But that one just sticks to your ribs.
The mashed potatoes. My daughter is a mashed potato like nutcase. I swear. And if she's sick, that's what she needs me to get her is mashed potatoes, chicken soup. I mean, there's like the litany of things, Dad. You know what to get, right? So she's gonna want that recipe. I'm telling you right now. And I'm curious. Adirondack. I mean, so these were part of the Adirondack Mountains at one point. Is that so?
Sure. Yeah.
I wonder if the Baraboo Hills have a mashed potato going for them or something. Maybe.
Who knows?
Okay, Brenda, we're going to start with you again.
Yes.
How about a favorite thing to do when you need to de-stress?
In the summertime, it would be go for a bike ride. In the winter, it would be go cross-country skiing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Active.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Which they say is really good. If you want to get some stress out, you really need to do something active, not sit around and play ping pong. So, or... Maybe, I guess that could be, maybe if you're really into gaming too. My son gets really going, I guess, when he does gaming.
Yeah.
So
I like to move. I like to be out in nature,
okay.
Moving through nature.
Is there any particular place you like to do the cross-country skiing?
Kind of all over, wherever there's snow, in the woods.
Okay.
So sometimes lately we've had to travel a little bit more.
Okay.
But yeah, around here, I love skiing out at Blue Mountain State Park. It's my favorite local place to ski.
Okay.
Elver Park in Madison is really awesome too.
Okay.
So those are my two local favorite places.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Jackie, what's your favorite thing to do when you need to de-stress?
I would say go take a hike in the woods.
Okay.
Yep.
Does Dan tell you that? Like when he's had enough, he just says, go take a hike in the woods. Because I can see that.
He never has enough of me.
I can see that. Go take a long walk off a short pier. That's what my wife says to me. No, she doesn't say that. So other things, though, she would like me. Well, I take a hike every night with my dog. So I guess that works. So do you any particular place you like to hike?
There's a lot of woods on our property. So honestly, wherever. We don't really have trails. We just go out and find a new spot.
Okay. That works for me. So explore, right? Every day is an exploration. So how about you, Dan?
Yeah, I could say the same thing, like go take a hike, but really anything in nature. I think another good answer for me is go kayak down the Wisconsin River or any river, but the Wisconsin River has nice sandbars and you can sleep on overnight.
Sure.
Yeah, I like doing that.
Sure. So do you have to bring, I suppose you bring a tent and whatnot with you or just sleeping bag and sleep under the star?
Yeah, we recently started to bring tents because we've gotten caught in the rain sometimes, but I used to just go on a sleeping bag on the sandbar.
Okay.
That's good enough.
I have a brother-in-law who used to love to go out. In the middle of the winter, he would sleep in the backyard just because he loved the winter. And we have pictures of him like sleeping in a sleeping bag with just his nose poking out through the sleeping bag. It's like, you are absolutely crazy. So get inside where it's warm. But different strokes, right, for different folks. So, Mr. Salinas, what's your favorite thing to do?
I'm an outdoorsy type guy, too. So we like to go paddling. thing whenever we can, and that can be something as simple as we live about 7 miles away from Mirror Lake, and that's always a fun paddle. And then we're real lucky that we live within an hour or two of a bunch of places like the Wisconsin River. The Baraboo River can be a little challenging sometimes, but it's you know, like practically backyard. And then the Kickapoo River is some of the best paddling I've ever been on in anywhere. So those sorts of things. Also like to take the dog for a walk. I mean, that's a good one, you know, in the afternoon. Instead of just, you know, starting to veg, and the dog always reminds you, and the dog appreciates it too. So so things like that. Yeah, being active, moving around. Also, you know, working in the garden, you know, since a lot of the work that I do, I balance between like computer and phone and meetings and things like that.
Sure.
And after doing that, there's nothing I like more than like going out and doing some hard labor in the garden, forking beds or, you know, or harvesting or just being out there. So, it helps to have a lot of different options.
Boy, I hate to think of that. You all have a commonality here. Everyone likes to be outdoors, and here we are indoors doing a podcast. I'm so sorry. This must feel like penance or something. So, but anywho, how about – this will be the last question, okay, and then we'll get on to the meat of things, maybe with some roast Adirondack potatoes and gravy. That would be nice too. But quick one. Favorite movie or book? Jackie?
Movie – Across the Universe. Love it. That was good.
I don't think I've heard of that movie. I have not seen that movie.
Gotta see it.
Yeah. Okay. It's Across the Universe.
Yes.
All right. Dan, favorite movie or book?
I guess I'll go with a book. My favorite is Mycelium Running by Paul Stamets.
Not heard of that book.
So. Yeah. It just talks about, I don't know, it's really dense, but it's easy enough for someone like me to understand everything, but talks about how to propagate mycelium mushrooms and talks about all the different uses, not just food wise, but how they can restore ecosystems, how they communicate across thousands of acres, how they connect the trees to each other, how they keep forests together as working as one unit. It's really interesting stuff that I'm not good at conveying.
You know, we're all looking here. There's a guy outside right now that here we thought this would be a quiet surrounding, and there's somebody out there weed eating. Yeah. So we should go out and tell him, you know, this isn't the best thing to do for those weeds. You should treat them better than this. So, but that's it. You know, interesting, Dan, as you're talking about it, it sounds like there's an awful lot of stuff there that we wouldn't normally think about either, how things are interconnected. And, you know, sometimes we lose track of that in general, that there's a lot more, I think of like Star Trek, and there's the Discovery, there's this whole thing about the, what the heck are they called too now, but they have this whole thing of a type of creature that they're basically a spore, a mushroom type of spore, and that all of that connects the universe, which maybe they got that idea from that book. It's possible. So
I think there is, I haven't seen it, but Paul Stamets talks about Star Trek using him as a character, and
sure.
I think his name is Paul Stamets in the episode.
Yeah. He's the character, the engineer that figures out how to do it himself, so that their transwarp drive, or I mean, it's a special kind of drive that they can instantaneously go from one place to another.
Yeah. So that's cool. I'll have to see that episode.
If you watch any of the first season, that's one of the things that makes Star Trek Discovery different, is this technology that, you know, sets them apart, and it causes all kinds of problems for them too. So it's like a lot of things, right? So, Brenda, how about you? Favorite book or movie?
I'm going to just sort of dodge this question, because I feel like I always, whatever my favorite book is what I'm reading at the time. I feel like I go from one genre and one, you know, and it's the same with movies. I love World War II movies and books. And right now I'm actually interested in, I'm reading a lot about mushrooms, and fantastic fungi is one of the, you know, the movies that I have been interested in. So I just bought two books this weekend about mushrooms. I'm super interested in the same thing you are. So
super cool.
That's what I'm interested in this week.
See, and it's hard for me because I was a child of the 70s. So when we talk about mushrooms, there's only one place my brain goes to. And I apologize for that. But it's like, man, did you do those shrooms? Oh, yeah, man, those were excellent shrooms. Yeah. So there's so much more to mushrooms
but
than
the
that,
interconnectedness
right?
that you were talking about is what I think is just so fascinating in the way the mycelium are talking, using, you know, helping connect all of the other species in the forest. So
Paul Stamets is also into the this mind enhancing element of mushrooms also. So it's,
which is interesting when you think about it. What's the chemical nature of a mushroom that it does that sort of thing to us, right?
Brother, that's a whole other 4-hour podcast right there. call me up when you want to do that.
Okay, we'll be talking shrooms too. Are you. That will be or something. Exactly. So okay, Jay, favorite book or movie?
I'm going to give you a couple movies. A Child of the 70s also, so The Godfather.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've
yeah.
watched that 46 times and could watch it probably every night for the rest of my life. Just love that movie.
Pacino,
making.
Did you know they didn't even want Pacino for that part? And it was Marlon Brando coming to the aid of him and saying, I want this. This kid's doing great. Yeah. Just leave him alone.
Every piece of that movie still ring, you know, if you, some movies you watch them over and over and then you start picking them apart. And this one is held together for me. Another movie I really love is called Topsy Turvy. By an artist named, a director named Mike Lee, who usually does these really bleak, you know, class consciousness British things. And this is it's a story about Gilbert and Sullivan and the creation of the Mikado. Mm-hmm. And it's a movie kind of about the collaborative creative process. And another one that just gets deeper and deeper every time I watch it. One of my favorite books of all time is The Moor's Last Sigh by Salman Rushdie. Mm. And just really beautiful language, very dense story. It is a book that, like for the first 100 pages, I didn't know what it was about, but just captivated by the flowing language and the ideas. And then I got to the end and went right back to the beginning and read it straight through again. And so it's been one that I go back to occasionally. And then, of course, all Rushdie's work is also really beautiful and compelling and challenging.
Sure. So. Sure. I remember Robert Pershing's book on Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance did that to me, where the first time I read through it, I'm like, what is he talking about? And then as you get through the whole thing, you start to realize what he's talking about. And then you have to go back and read it again so you know what he's talking about from the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. So fascinating stuff. So, folks, my guests today on today's episode of Frame of Reference are many and varied. Jay Salinas with our wonderful Worm Farm Institute, which is the kind of the main product or main thing we're talking about, Farm Art Detour. Jackie and Dan Eng are here as well with the Veggie Emporium, and we'll talk more about them as participants in this process, as a vendor, as well as just how you came to know about Fall Art Detour. And Brenda Baker, who is also an artist and a writer and museum curator, but we'll be talking about Brenda's association and how she came to that as an artist and what it means for all of us. So we're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more of this episode. Don't go anywhere. Here on 99.7 Max FM's Digital Network and Frame of Reference.
McFarland's Problem Solvers Playhouse presents Freddy Farmster Fantasizes Over Fence.
There has got to be a better way to get my field work done. I need to go hang by Del Bradley Bill over at McFarland's.
Later that day,
Del Bradley Bill, what do you got in one of them fancy fence tractors?
Well, Freddy, follow me out front and feast your eyes on the full line of fence that will flip your fantasies into reality in no time flat.
Fantastic!
Another fantasy fulfilled by the problem solvers at McFarland's, 780 Carolina Street, one block south of Highway 12 in Sauk City.
And we're back here with Frame of Reference and a whole series of guests here. Jay Salinas with Worm Farm. He is co-founder and director of special projects there and a CSA farmer, which we can talk a little bit about that. Brenda Baker is sitting immediately to his left. She's an artist, a VP of exhibits and facilities and initiatives with the Madison Children's Museum and a contributor to the Farm Art Detour, doing some collaboration with that. And then Jackie and Dan Engie are actually owners of Veggie Emporium. program, the Regenerative Farmers, which is going to be interesting to talk about. So the topic is the Fall Art Detour. You're listening to this episode because you want to know more about it, and we're airing these episodes shortly before it happens, so you can use it as sort of a primer, if you will, to the invite, hopefully for this year and for years to come, if all goes well. So let's start out. I'm going to go to you, Jackie and Dan, first. So now, when did you discover this whole thing called the Farm Art Detour, and how did you become vendors for it?
So I discovered it it must have been the 2016 detour. My friend invited me to it. We just drove around, saw the artwork, and I think we took a few classes for the Fermentation Fest part of it. And yeah, I just thought it was cool that it was going on in, you know, my backyard, and didn't know much about it, but want to check it out. And then fast forward to 2020, like, I knew I kind of wanted to do it again, but it wasn't in the forefront of my mind. But we had this farm stand that we put out, and Ashley from the Worm Farm Institute saw it and reached out to us and said, hey, the route's going to go by your farm. Do you want to be a stop? And we're like, sure. Because we were at that point in our business where we just say yes to everything. Like, we like see where it takes us. It's
that can burn you. I will caution you now.
Well, so, yeah, but I think I learned that advice from I don't know where. Is yeah, you start out saying yes to everything, and then you know you're doing a good job when you can say no.
Yeah.
And but we said yes, and we're really glad we did, because we made so many great connections, like saw all the cool people that are coming through, and just saw the potential of what's out there, and with, you know, making new connections and showing people what we're doing and seeing people get excited and enthused about it.
Sure. Sure. Well, and there are people from all over. I mean, we get draw from a really huge geographical area in terms of the people that come through and find out about it. So kudos to the communications people with Worm Farm and Fall Art Detour, right? So as many as, Jay, am I remembering right, is it like 50,000? Is it up in those kinds of numbers?
We in a good year, we'll get between 20 and 25,000 that will drive the detour route for the 10 days. Yeah.
Okay.
And it had grown every year from the beginning. So
and these are country roads, folks, that, you know, on a good year, they maybe see 20 cars a year. So the roads get a little more usage during the Farm Art Detour. I always want to call it the Fall Art, but that's a different organization. So but
it's okay, yeah, because we sort of have built on that existing cultural infrastructure.
Sure.
We sort of, they preceded us. We sort of coordinated to be on the same weekend for a while, and they gave us a little boost up into the world.
Okay.
And then they set us free. And now they operate independently, but cross market. We share their stuff. They share our stuff, and a lot of the same folks, and but very different types of events.
Right, right. Yeah, this is much more centered on the combination or cooperation, the interaction of
integration.
Of farm and art, and how there is a lot of connective tissue there that we don't even necessarily think about.
Like mycelial networks almost.
There you go. How, Jackie, so Dan is doing all this stuff. Were you on board with it right from the beginning, or did it take a while to kind of see the vision and go along with it? Or did you like take it another step, and like my wife does, so she figures out something much better than I am, and she leads me forward once I have the initial, we should do this.
Yeah, I was excited. I was like, whoa, someone recognizes us? Someone sees our farm stand? This is really cool. Oh my gosh, I know what Farm like Art Detour is. Like, we went on that for my first time in 2018.
Okay.
And it was just such a beautiful experience, driving through the country and seeing all these art installations and everything. And then I was like, wow, someone wants us to be a part of this? Like, that is just, it really... It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And it was such a beautiful experience to see, like what you said, such a diverse amount of people coming from Chicago, Minneapolis, Sauk, Plain, and leaving with a sense of community.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so neat because it almost feels like I think in theater terms, it's like you're with your peeps, you know, and you just all of a sudden, these are people that kind of get it the same way you're getting it as time goes on, right? So, and most of them are, you know, they're everybody that I've met, it's either people that are just interested and want to know more, or there are people that this is like their life. And this is like, oh, this is so cool that you guys are doing this. I knew this existed somewhere, right? So kind of, it's like the zealots and then the kind of the newbies, and, you know, you've got the whole range of folks, but they all care. You know, they're sensitive, intelligent people. So, so let's look a little bit, Brenda, at tell us about your work, because you're an artist, right? So you, how did you first get involved, and what did you adapt your work to this? Or?
Well, I had been working with a collaborative group called Fieldwork. So right when I finished graduate school, I was collaborating with about four other artists in Madison. We were doing outdoor installations all over town on the frozen lakes, in the woods, in all over the place. And then I started really becoming more and more interested in the idea of working outside of a museum setting, even though I work in a museum, for my own artwork, of also doing work out in public settings, of all kinds, mostly in nature. And then my friend David Wells, I believe, was on the board for the first, he did a piece for the first art detour, and then I think he recommended me for the next one. Okay. And so I first participated as an artist in 2012, and then I also had a piece in 2015 and 2020.
Okay.
And then this year, again, I'm doing a collaboration.
So I'm interested in that process. How do you develop an idea and then execute it? Because this is different than most curated museums in that it's kind of a one shot. It's up and then it's there for a bit of time, and then most of them are gone.
So it's really fun and it's sort of a beautiful experience, because you get to have a relationship with a particular piece of land, and the goal is to respond to that piece of land or to the geography or the history or whatever it is that moves you about that particular place. So I love it because it gives you a chance to research something new and to, you know, collaborate with the local community and to try out new ideas in a bigger way. So for me, I'm a painter and a sculptor, but I really love doing site-specific outdoor work, partly because it's a chance to work on a monumental scale that I can't do in my studio. And it's also really challenging because it's really hard to work on a monumental scale and make something that's impactful.
Well, and there's so many different flavors to the pieces, or, you know, I remember everything from whimsical, you know, the was it a pig that was jumping over the fence for 1 year, you know, and it was, and the beehive was there. I remember that being just like, what a cool idea to even have thought of it, but then to execute it is a really unique thing. And then I thought, oh, I wish that could just stay there, because that would be such a cool thing to. And then there was another year where there were these houses that were built from sticks, and you could go around through them. And they, I just remember just being so in awe of the intricacy of how that all fit together. And yet when you looked at them, they looked like, you know, hedges almost, you know, kind of thing. So is that, do you find that same sort of experience where you just kind of start going and
I mean, I think taking the tour, I mean, I can't tell you how many miles I put on my bicycle in my car, driving around, looking at the sites and really thinking about how they made me feel and what kind of things I could do in those particular sites. Like I think about 2015, where it was a new route and I had a very particular idea of what I wanted to do. And we couldn't find a site. I mean, I knew which piece of property I wanted, and the property owner hadn't responded or whatever. And I just felt like it either was going to be that site or it wasn't going to happen, because I was so clear on what needed to happen in that space. And thankfully it worked out. So anyway, that was.
It almost seems like the land has to speak to you in a way,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, that might seem weird to some folks, but it's, I think that's the same in any artistic process, whether it's land speaking to you or the text speaking to you or, do you find that how have you resensitized yourself to listen to that voice? Is there anything you've had to do to kind of tune yourself into
it? No, I feel like I've always been a really intuitive artist, and I mean, in that particular situation, I knew which property I wanted. So, I don't know that I've had to retune. I just listen to myself and listen to the surroundings. And, you know, I mean, in other years, I think in 2012 when I did the corn cribs, they were that those also spoke to me. These four cribs, and my idea was to wrap them and light them up, so they were super beautiful at night and during the day. And I was really interested in making whimsical light work with a light touch.
Okay.
But in all situations, I felt like in driving the route and looking at the route again and again, each of the pieces of property spoke to me in some way. You know, I felt like I had my ideas evolved after seeing the land.
But yeah, I wish people would learn that language more, you know, just listening to their surroundings and letting what will come come. You know, because that, you know, you could talk about all kinds of reasons why that doesn't exist more prevalently in our world. But there is there's a connection there that maybe it's the mushrooms, Dan. Do you think we're tuning into mushroom broadcast or something going on?
I think there's something there. Yeah.
Could be, you know, stranger things have been proven to be true. Mm-hmm. So, Jay, we're kind of going at this really kind of bass-ackwards, because now I'm going to, what is the fall art detour?
Whoa.
You know, the farm art detour, we've been talking about this thing and just kind of alluding to, like, everybody ought to know, which they should. Everyone should know about it. But what is the farm art detour?
Okay. Well, very basically, the farm art detour is approximately a 50-mile self-guided tour through the beautiful working lands of Sauk County, punctuated by temporary site-specific sculpture, which we're just hearing from Brenda about, but also local food, farms, poetry, music, and we're highlighting the unique human and natural history of Sauk County. We live in a really beautiful place, and so the artwork is sort of an excuse to get people out here to see what exists here all the time. It's really important that work is ephemeral, because it makes you look at the landscape in a different way. It gives you a different sort of sensibility as you're driving your car and trying to pick out what is art and what is already existing. Mm-hmm. But it's also, we found over the years that it's this really beautiful and powerful tool for community development, where we get to meet people like the Engies and the Brickles and the Stotzes, because everything that we do is completely dependent upon farmers to allow us to install artwork. So it is a real collaboration within the community, where we select, there's a jury that selects artists. And, go back. First, a route is determined. That there has been three routes. The detour has run since 2011. In that time, there has been three routes. They all about that 50-mile range. We started in the northern tier of the county for 4 years. We did a prototype and then 3 years. And then we did 3 years in the central part of the county. And now we're down here in southern Sauk County for the second year. And now doing that 3 years has been really critical, because it takes a while for, first of all, for the community to really know what you're up to and fully take advantage of that potential, and also for us to learn how it works best. So there's also an economic development component. We spur a lot of economic activity, and these are things that we didn't really set out to do when we started this. This was like our own little whimsical idea of installing artwork, but then we found all these other pieces that were really critical to making it happen and are really satisfying for me. I mean, again, these landowner relationships are absolutely critical, and it's so rewarding to make those connections, to get these farmers who are probably some of the most creative people out there, but seldom will they acknowledge it on their own. But this gives them that chance to sort of see how someone else's mind works. Also, we appreciate what they're doing. And then in many cases, I shouldn't say many, in some cases, the farmers actually collaborate with the artist to realize the work of art. But it always starts with that permission. So there's an enormous, it started out being an annual event, and after 2016, it became a biennial, because it was just way too big to manage sustainably and to do it right.
Sure.
And we spend a lot of time developing those community relations, you know, landowners, farmers, of course, business owners, town boards. I mean, that's one of my jobs, is every township that we pass through, we will meet with the town board there, present ourselves at a meeting, and let them know who we are, what we're up to, and if they have any questions or concerns. So, and so anyway, it's this really ambitious, sprawling, and when it works, it's so beautiful and it's so rewarding, and again, and we get to hang out and extended, you know, relationships with Brenda, and now developing this relationship with the Engies, and it's rewarding beyond anything I can share with you here now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like it keeps building, right?
We get a little bit better at what we're doing. And it's great now that, you know, we're in our 10th or year of doing it. And so there is a little bit of, I mean, we have a pretty good track record of doing what we said we're going to do, of being very respectful. No one gets hurt. You know, like you said, the country roads are clogged, but we do real good with wayfinding and safety and all those things, all these myriad factors that have to be considered in order to pull off this detour. Now we have a great staff, and it's going to be probably the best ever.
So, I love what you're talking about with the making people just look more closely at the land, being more attentive to their surroundings. Right. Because you're right, you can be driving through, and all of a sudden you're like, is that one of them? No, but that's really pretty.
Exactly.
You know, or
exactly.
Is that, oh, look at that. And then some of the settings that things are in as well are just so, I mean to be this way, so organic to what's around them, like the health message that was out in the middle of the field for the last time. Yeah. And that was just, I remember just sitting and thinking about that and how important health was, but also how healthy it was to be in that place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just it kept building up, you know, people need this type of experience in order to be healthy. You know, can we figure that out? You know, and you think of people in like big cities and whatnot, they don't get that, I don't think. They don't have an opportunity to really get it, right?
Well, and again, like you said, people come from all over. So this is an opportunity for folks from cities to travel back roads. And there's a really beautiful series of interactions that takes place between those from away and those from nearby, and we have this opportunity to overcome our misperceptions or even suspicions about one another when we come peaceably into each other's places.
Sure, makes complete sense, folks. We're going to wrap up this episode of a three-part. Possibly. I don't know. Could be fewer. Could be more. You just don't know. You're going to have to listen next week and find out. But my guests are Jay Salinas, who is one of the co-founders and director of special projects with the Worm Farm Institute and the Farm Art Detour. Brenda Baker, who is an artist and is contributing to this year's project. We'll hopefully get a chance to find out more about that particular project. She's also the VP of Exhibits and Facilities and Initiatives at the Madison Children's Museum. And then Jackie and Dan Enge, the owners of Veggie Emporium. Regenerative farmers, which hopefully we'll find out more about that as well. So come back next week to hear more of this interview and learn more about all these incredible topics that each of these my guests are experts in, because it'll be rewarding, educational, and I hope just plain old fun, okay, here on Frame of Reference and 99.7 Max FM's Digital Network.